brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and Straight Talk with the Guys in the Community.
Soft Rep Radio, on time, on target. It has been, honestly, quite a few years since Jake Zwig has been on the podcast. I don't really know why, because I love having Jake on. And actually, Jake, I was thinking about this. I think one of the last times you were on, you really hosted the show while I was on pain meds because I had multiple hernia operations at once. And we brought on Jesse Awuji. And actually, I still have him on Facebook, but I don't know what he's up to. But NASCAR driver and I think active duty Navy, right? Do you still talk to him?
Yeah, I talk to Jesse all the time. I actually talked to him last week because the young man that he had been kind of sponsoring that had massive cancer. He posted a post maybe a couple of days ago about the last time that he got to see his buddy. And it was a tearjerker because the little kid was obviously really, really weak. And you could see it in the video, and you know Jesse was there, and then you know the kid passed away a couple of days later. So
what was this kid like? A fan of his stuff?
Huh?
What was this kid like? A fan of his driving or something?
Yeah. He's a little African American kid. He was probably four when they met, and it may have been Make a Wish. So he spent a day with Jesse, and that was his hero. And so they drove race cars, and Jesse took him around the lap a couple times in his car. And then Jesse gave him some gloves, and he spent a whole day with Jesse. But he was like four and a half at the time. And then, he's just deteriorated. I don't remember exactly what he had, but the doctor said he wouldn't see his fifth birthday, and he made it to his seventh.
Wow.
So, but Jesse spent a lot of time with him. He'd go see him and visit him, and it just touching story, you know. It just goes to show you that, you know, Jesse Awuji is who he says he is. You know, I told y'all before, like, when I did my piece on him in 14, I was like, yo, he's going to have a chance now. If he could stop wrecking these cars early on in his career, he's going to have a chance. So he's moved up. I think he's racing trucks this year, if I'm not mistaken, but he got a ride now. He's got a number, so you know, they're trying to promote him as much as they can. He just needs to, you know, he's doing pretty good racing also. So we'll see how it all turns out.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a really sad story. At the same time, it's, I guess, a really cool way for him to go out, to be able to do that with his hero. And, you know, I would think as a little kid, that's got to be a dream come true. But it's got to be heartbreaking, probably for Jesse and especially for the family. But yeah, I haven't spoken to him, so it's nice to hear an update on him. Maybe we'll get him back on. That would be an interesting story to hear about. For those who haven't listened to the podcast, or haven't listened back to those older episodes and aren't familiar with Jake is a former Navy SEAL, now most recently director of player development at University of Illinois. People know you from Dude, You're Screwed and also Top Shot. And I think the funny thing is we've talked about it on the show, but I think the first time you came on, you were like this villain because of how you were portrayed on Top Shot. And then I think people came around because of Dude, You're Screwed.
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny that so I wanted to have a TV show for a football program. That was the whole reason to go into TV at all. And then you get on Top Shot and you realize that they got the whole show rigged. They already know who they want to win and they're going to give you guns that don't work. And so me being me, I told them, you give me a gun that don't work again, I'm out of here. And, you know, they hold you being on TV as a hostage mechanism, right? Oh, you're going to be on TV, man. Like, you better do what we say. I'm like, yo, I don't give two F's about TV. Deuces. And they were like, oh, my God, you can't leave. I'm like, yo, I'm out. I'm gone. Like, you hold me hostage? No. Okay, I'm leaving then. So I left. And the cool thing was, we were doing 2.4 up until that episode. That episode did 800,000. I'm sorry. That episode did 2.4 million. The next episode did 800,000. And the show got canceled that Monday.
Holy shit. Because they need some villain there, I guess, you know?
I mean, like, you know, like I went off the reservation. I'll admit it. I was out of my mind. It's great entertainment. Right. But the thing that it benefited me the most, and I'd never, you know, I didn't have it planned or anything. I didn't know that it would do this. When the show went from 2.4 to 800,000, my phone blew up. That, like, literally that Monday, I got four phone calls from executive producers, two of them on that show, saying, "Hey, man, your phone's never going to stop ringing." I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Well, here's the deal. No one walks off a TV show and takes, you know, 1.4 million people with them. Ever. Never. You had 1.4 million people watching you. They weren't watching Top Shot. They were watching you. So, you know, at that point, I had been pretty well read in because this was, you know, 7 or 8 months after the TV show had went off. I had taken a couple other calls from producers. And, you know, I'll be the first one to say that I could never live in Hollywood because no one is real. And yeah. So, you know, you kind of listen to that stuff and you're like, oh, man, like for, you know, the first like 10 phone calls. Oh, my God, we're going to put you in a movie. We're making a movie star. Okay, cool. Send me the contract. Contract never comes, yep. You know, and then so then you're like, all right, this is complete. Now I'm to the point where like, yeah, send me a contract. I don't even talk to them anymore. Just send me the contract and then we'll talk. So and that's how I got on Dude, You're Screwed.
I had a guy recently reach out to me. Who's he wants to get into producing. I don't think he even is a producer. And he's like, yeah, can you sign an NDA and then tell me all your ideas for a TV show? I'm like, what? You want me to sign an NDA to discuss my own ideas? How does that work?
How does that work, bud? Yeah, bud, learn the game, man. Understand the game. So, hey, I'm going to share this awesome story from Top Shot, from Dude, You're Screwed, because this one's up there in comical value. And,
go for it,
you know,
man.
I like to try to be entertaining.
That was, by the way, that was a great show, man. It really was entertaining watching kind of the dynamic between you and Terry and how you guys were complete opposite, and I enjoyed it, man.
Crazy, right? Like, how about this one? So, I just looked, somehow I got on it. It was on something I was looking at. Oh, I know why. I had to send somebody a link to who I was. And so I just used a Dude, You're Screwed links. And I didn't realize, like, Rotten Tomato had us at like 9.4. And I'm like, man, we did do some good TV work, right? How about the new president of Discovery back in the day canceled it because he said none of it's real. It's all fake. And I'm like, hey, let me go talk to that dude. I'll show him 25 pounds in 100 hours. Like, I'll show you. You can't fake that right there. You can't fake, you know, 218 to like 193. That's impossible in 100 hours to fake, you know. So anyway, we'll see what happens. I know a couple guys are trying to get me in on a new series that's happening. But with football, it all really has to be a timing game. So, but anyway, let's talk about this. How I got on Dude, You're Screwed, because this is hilarious.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there and I'm in Texas, midsummer, nothing going on, kind of just hanging out. The phone rings. Some high energy dude. Hey, how you doing? I'm like, yeah. Hey, this is Todd. I'm like, yeah. He's like, Todd, Animal Planet. I'm like, yeah. He said, what are you doing on Saturday? I'm like, it was Thursday. Okay. Nothing, Todd. What do you got going on? He said, well, we got this new show, and you're on it. What do you mean I'm on it? He's like, I've already put you on the show. Don't worry about it. You go to Denver on Saturday. I'm like, yeah, I go to Denver on Saturday. He's like, okay, I'm going to have somebody call you back. They're going to send you some tickets. Okay, all right, cool. So literally 2 minutes later, some lady calls and said, hey, you're going to Denver. You're going to be with High Noon Entertainment. Where are you flying out of? I'm like, San Antonio. She's like, what airline do you want to fly? I was like, Southwest. So I'm like, okay. So in a matter of like 10 minutes, I'm like, hey, we're going to a TV show in Colorado. She's like, when? I'm like, Saturday. She's like, okay. So don't think nothing of it, right? get on a plane, fly in. I'm walking into this, like, let's say like a 2-star hotel, right? And there's some old dude in the front cutting all the bushes down, right? So I'm like, oh, it must be a survival show. Okay. Like, I obviously know this dude. I'm not staying in the same hotel as this dude by chance. And this dude's out here. He had literally, I'm telling you, like bundles of bushes and sticks on the sidewalk. And he's out in the, like in the side of a hotel, just cutting all this stuff down, right? With a machete. So I walk by him and he looks at me and goes, oh my God, it's Jake. I'm like, I look at him like, oh man. He goes, dude, you're on Top Shot. I'm like, yeah. He's like, what are you doing here? I'm like, oh dude, I'm in town for this music festival. And he looks at me and he's like, no, you're not. I'm like, yeah, I'm in town for a music festival. He's like, BS, man, you're here for this TV show, aren't you? I'm like, nah, man, not me. So I go in the hotel. I got there late, and so it was like probably it was getting dark. So they gave us a schedule, and I was on the schedule to go out at 12 o'clock the next day. But there was a whole group of guys that were going out at 6 o'clock. And so since I had no idea what I was doing, I'm like, yo, I'm getting on the bus at 6 o'clock. So then I got 12 hours to figure out what the hell it is that I'm here for. So I get on the bus at 6 o'clock in the morning. They take us up into the National Forest. Bunch of awesome dudes from High Noon, Scott Feely and the crew. And we're out there in the woods and they're testing people and their survival skills. And so like probably midway through the morning, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm doing there. Right. I'm like, yeah, I know survival. I grew up in the woods. Yes, I'm really good. But I don't look or feel like any of these dudes. There was an Indian there, a Native American Indian. There was Matt Graham was there. This guy, Tom, was there. All these dudes were in the survival game heavy. And so we're sitting there around this tent, and Matt Graham is talking about these shoes that he has that he made from an elk or something he killed, right? And so I looked at the shoes, and they looked a little too good to be handmade, right? Like, having been to Africa and seen homemade shoes, I'm like, I don't know about that. So I was like, hey, Matt, throw me them shoes. So he throws me the shoes. On the bottom of the sole, it says Vibrant. You know, Vibrant makes like rubber soles for things.
Yep.
I start going yard on him. I throw the shoes back at him. I'm like, get out of here. Like, you didn't make those shoes. You bought them somewhere. Those are Vibrant soles. He loses his mind. He's like, no, I didn't make them. So anyway, I'm just being me, like kind of stirring a pot. So one of the other dudes, the Indian dude, comes back. And he caught a fish. And he's like, yo, I caught this fish with my hand. And I look at him. I'm like, hey, stop lying to us, bud. You didn't catch no fish with your hand. You definitely didn't catch that 6-inch trout with your hand. Because that's impossible. He goes, hey, no, I got special techniques and all. I said, like, shut up. I'm like, you're lying. So then the TV people are like, yeah, a fisherman had hooked it up the stream. And he threw it back because it was too small. And he pulled it out of the stream. So anyway, I'm going yard on all these dudes. So about 12 o'clock shows up, and I got to go out and test. Well, here comes Mr. High Energy Todd Miller. And when I tell you hilarious, like 5'2", little Jewish dude from New York in a 3-piece suit in the middle of a national forest. And so I'm standing there, and I'm like, so I asked, at this point I had a decent talking relationship with the guys doing the shoot. And I said, hey, who was that? That's Todd Miller. I'm like, oh my God, that's my dude. So I roll over there and I'm like, hey man, I need to talk to you. Come here, man. He goes, so I said, hey, you're Todd Miller. He goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Who are you? And then he looks at me, he starts laughing. He's like, ah, I know who you are. He's like, you're here because I want you here. So I'm like, great. Since that's out of the way, like, what the F am I doing here, Todd? He's like, dude, look around at all these guys. I'm like, yeah. Is anybody going to watch them on TV? Anybody? I'm like, yeah, not really. He's like, you're on here so people actually watch the show. He's like, they're all interviewing and testing to see if we're going to put them on the show. You're already on the show. And that was it. So after that, like, any worry I had about like my test or any of that was out of the, you know, I was done. So I was like, this was me. And then, you know, obviously we killed it, did well, but it was just hilarious that like, that's how TV works.
Was Terry, you know, like no, in that initial group, or, you know, because I would think he's another guy that, you know, people are going to watch.
So Terry and Matt Graham actually filmed the pilot. So when I showed up, they had been working on the show. This is no lie. They had been working on the show for 4 years when I showed up.
Wow.
So like I literally, so what happened was that was the chemistry test. We shot the chemistry test and then that was called it mid-July-ish. And then fast forward 2 months and like the middle of September, they like, hey, we're going to Alaska. And I'm like, all right, cool. So we went to Alaska and I showed up the first day at the airport. We met everybody in Denver and then we flew up to Alaska. And Terry Shepard and John Hudson were like, hey, man, what are you doing here? I'm like, don't look at me, dude. And they were mad because they were like, look, we've been working on this TV show for 4 years. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, talk to them. I ain't got nothing to do with it. And so it was just kind of interesting. You know, but it ended up working out really well for all of us.
Yeah, because so, you guys, honestly, from what I know, you guys sort of clashed a little bit, but it made for entertainment.
So, you know, in anything, like, Terry Shepard's a Green Beret. Like, I love that dude. You know, like, we had a great time on the show. But, you know, you can't have a show where everybody's happy and just going. And, you know, like, I got no problem being the bad guy on a TV show.
Need some drama.
You know, like... people were killing me for cutting John Hudson's rope. And I'm like, dude, you understand? I jumped off that bridge like 5 times before we shot that scene, right? Before we like lowered him down, I made sure that I wasn't going to kill him if I cut his rope. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's just how we are. But like me cutting his rope, people are like, oh, he's a villain. Like he just cut his rope and he fell. Now Hudson didn't know what was going on, but you know, I wasn't going to kill him from 30 feet. So
My favorite was when you had to do your episode and they gave you what was like a part of a shark fin to eat and it was all you had to eat for 24 hours and then you just chucked it and you were like, I don't eat fish, man.
Oh man, it was fermented shark. I can't, like, there's no words to describe how bad it smelled to the point where I couldn't even like get it off of my hands. Like it, I mean, kimchi smells pretty bad and it had kimchi beat by 1,000 times.
I mean, it was just funny though, because it was all that you had to eat there your entire day to survive.
The roadkill of the sea.
Yeah. Roadkill. Right. Like, I mean, that's the good thing though. I wrestled. So as long as I know it's only 5 days, you know, 4 nights and 5 days. I can eat dirt for 4 nights and 5 days. So, you know, getting me to have to eat something isn't high on my priority list. And definitely not some fish that smells easily the worst thing I've ever smelled in my life. Like dead rotting bait trap stuff. Like you put, so you, to bait for coyotes and like carnivores, you'll take like a bunch of meat and put it in a jar and put it in the ground for like 2 months. And when you open that up, like you really have like a fermented kind of like piece of meat in there in juice and it'll make you throw up, but it really attracts the coyotes really well. It smelled worse than that.
Damn. So getting into what you're doing now, Jake, because you were telling me about this.
Yep.
And to be honest, I don't know much about the whole football world. I know Jack doesn't either. You are now a director of player development at University of Illinois. I know that you've always been a part of football with football coaching at universities and stuff, but what exactly is a director of player development and like, what is it that you do?
So as a director of player development, my job is basically to get the players on the football team to develop and be as good as they can be. So straight into my wheelhouse, you know, goal achievement, motivation. And I've kind of taken it a step farther and I kind of look at it as like, okay, let me make the team culture. So all the coaching staff was on the road for all of January. We had a bunch of team meetings and kind of got the guys to set the culture. And really what I'm trying to do is get it to be a player-led team. And we're pretty close to that right now. It's probably, when we get done with spring ball here in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start spring ball and we'll have a month. So probably by May, they'll fully get their hands on being a complete player-led team. I'm responsible for basically class attendance and behavior and all of the things that go in with personal development. You know, we're taking guys that have come from very limited home structures and trying to put them into college athletics at a Division I level where they've got to be responsible to go to class. They've got to be responsible to pay their bills. And so a lot of life training, a lot of life skills. I run a trouble prevention program, which basically we do a case every other week. Now we're doing a case every third week where we run through some situation and then they list the consequences on, are the actions on one side and then the consequences to those actions on the other side. And I don't make them determine what's right or wrong. I just want to, look, these are the actions that you can take. Those are the consequences. If you're okay with those consequences, then you can take those actions. It's really just an eye opener for them to kind of, when they get in situations, to start thinking about, man, the consequences of those actions right there, I know those already and they're not good. So kind of a holistic approach to making people better. But that's what I'm really good at. So it's awesome for me to be able to, you know, have the ability to interact with everybody on the football team.
Yeah, that's cool to hear. And I feel like you're a guy that's relatable that could probably speak to them and, you know, they understand where you're coming from, especially with a background like yours.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, that's the, you know, I got probably, you know, people ask me about how I grew up. I'm like, look, I'm black and I grew up in a white household doing basically country things, right? Like trapping raccoons. Like I grew up differently than everybody else, but I also grew up in Steilacoom, Washington, where, you know, my high school was 70% diverse because of the Army base. You know, I'm meeting up, I'm in town right now in Steilacoom, and I got seven of my guys from meeting up for drinks tomorrow night at 7, and it's super diverse, right? So it's weird because I can go on both sides of the fence pretty easy. There's no country kid. Like, we got a couple country kids on the team. They can't, you know, my guy, Drake Davis, who left and out of Northern Illinois, you know, I talked to him about hunting as much as he could talk to me about picking apples, and they have an apple orchard. I said, yo, I grew up on apples. What kind of apples do you have? You know, like, just the ability to relate or talk to anybody because of my unique upbringing. So 100%.
That's cool, man. And so, by the way, for the audience, the way that Jake and I reconnected, you shot me over a text about this GoFundMe, and I don't know why, probably because it's been years, I didn't have your number stored, and I was like, who is this texting me about this GoFundMe? But what it is you got in touch with this single mother who has several children, she's on hard times, and she was a fan of Dude, You're Screwed, and you started a GoFundMe to help her out. $3,500 raised so far, over half of your goal. What's the story behind it? Because from what it looks like, you know, you're doing great work, and I tried to help out a little bit, and you know, it's always tough to see that type of thing, and it's cool to see people in the community doing the right thing.
So, you know, I appreciate your help. You know, I get contacted probably, let's say twice a day by somebody not looking for help, but just wants to connect with me, right? So, like, I had two kids yesterday send me Instagram messages about wanting to be recruited by Illinois. So this is probably two, three months ago now. She hit me up on Instagram. She's just like, hey, I'm a big fan of Dude, You're Screwed. Like, I watch the TV show all the time. We have it on Netflix, da-da-da-da-da. And there was just something about the way she wrote it. And when I looked at her profile, So we texted, we went back and forth on Instagram for maybe a couple of days. And I said, hey, I'm like, give me a call. And so I talked to her and I said, hey, what's your deal? And she's like, well, I just had a baby, you know, the baby's 6 weeks old, you know, I'm doing okay, but my car blew up and it's going to cost too much to fix. And so, but the more I talked to her, the more I was like, man, she can be really successful if she has the right person helping her. And so as I listened to her and we talked a little bit more over the next couple of weeks, I don't take projects unless I think they're going to be really successful. And I don't give my time to people unless I know they're going to be really successful. And so most of the time I'm mentoring superstars, because I'm going to require you to do superstar stuff because I don't have any limitations. Like I've had to overcome too much of my life for you to tell me that you can't do something when I know it's going to make you successful. And so the more we talked, the more I was like, man, like she's 9 months away from getting her, I think it's LPN license. And, you know, she had this kid and, you know, her upbringing was awful. You know, she just the whole story. And I said, man, she's got it. She just got to learn how to use it. And so I started the GoFundMe, and then I kind of panicked, to be honest with you. I panicked because I was like, yo, am I getting a wool pulled over my eyes? But I got a high EQ, right? Like my emotional intelligence to read people is really high. And I said, no, I don't think so. But I pushed the panic button. And so then I took a day off of work and I drove out. And I spent like 4 hours with her. And she don't know this. And if she listens to this, she'll hear it. But I really was going through her whole house to see what I was missing. And I was hoping that I didn't find 20 pairs of Air Jordans. I was hoping that I didn't find, right, like Gucci clothes in the closet and Prada purses and all of that other stuff. And I got there. She lives in a little townhouse. She pays her rent. She's living right now. She's living on $1,300 a month total. And she's got four kids, three in school, and then she's got the baby. And so I'm sitting there, and as I'm in her house, I'm like, nah, this is what it is, right? Like, there was one pair of Air Jordans in the house for one of her older kids. That was it. There was one pair. Regular shoes. She didn't have anything in her closet. Nothing. Okay? She had some sports clothes, and that's about it. And then the house was clean. Everything was nice. I was like, man, this is exactly what I thought it was. And so then, you know, I spent 2 or 3 hours over there. We got some lunch. I got to help hold the baby a little bit. And I was like, 100%. Like, as soon as I can get her a vehicle so I can alleviate that stress. Right before she had the baby, at one point, she was working three jobs.
Jeez.
Because I asked her, I said, how are you affording diapers and formula?
Yeah.
And she went to a closet and opened it up. And literally, she spent every penny she had from those three jobs preparing for the fact that she wasn't going to have a job. And she has diapers all the way up to size five. She had a whole closet full of formula. And she's like, look, I know this is my fourth kid. I know exactly what it's going to take. So for the 9 months prior, when I got pregnant, I just started every extra penny I had went to diapers and formula.
How can people find this GoFundMe?
I mean, I'll put a link right in the description. So,
you know what I mean? What's the title of it? You know,
it's just Jake's Wig. I have a single mother, could use Pay It Forward.
Okay.
But like I said, I'll post a link right in the description so people could go to it. And right now it's at over $3,500. The goal is $7,000, which, you know, is,
picture the four kids there.
Yeah. And it's really a noble goal. I mean, yeah. $7,000 is not a whole lot to ask to just get back on your feet.
Makes a big difference for a single mom, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be honest with you guys, somehow I started two GoFundMes and I tried to shut one of them down, but it's got $300 in it too. So I'm really at like 4,000, and I found like five vehicles at 6,000. So I put 7,000 in there. But I think I'm going to be able to get out at like 5,000 or 6,000. So it's really about 2,000 bucks left. And I'm going to throw some more money in there too. Not a lot, but I'm going to throw some more in there also. So we're getting really close to being able to get it done. But it's just one of those things. And then once I get her a vehicle, and we're going to get it, she got a job already. So she's got a job at Walgreens as a pharmacist assistant. And then the next thing I'm going to start on is getting this LPN license done. And then after that, we're going to move her back to Tennessee and get her out of Davenport, Iowa, because Davenport, Iowa is where she's from. It's not a very healthy environment for her. She was prospering in Nashville, Tennessee. So that's the long plan. And then the long plan after that is to get her RN license. And I guarantee you in 4 or 5 years, when we follow back on this, she's going to be a rock star. Rockstar with four kids and single mom killing it.
That's cool, man. And it, I think it's great to hear that it's just a story that spoke to you and that you're helping someone out. I mean, that's what we're here to do, is just help out other people, especially someone who is a fan of your work. And yeah, it's great to see. So I will post a link to that if you guys want to throw in. And once she gets a car, I think it'll make a huge difference. Another important thing, I wanted to get your take on Chief Eddie Gallagher. Pretty much every Navy SEAL I've had on the show, I just have wanted to get their take because, you know, it's something near and dear to them. Kristen Beck gave me her take, which I'm going to be playing. That episode is going up next week or in a couple weeks. Yep. I just wanted to hear what you thought. And also, do you know Eddie? He might be around your age, right?
Yeah, I don't know him personally, but, you know, at the end of the day, I find it amazing that, you know, there's war crimes, right? There's a bunch of things you can do that are not right. But, you know, when you got killers out there killing people, that's what the killers do, right? And a lot of people want to sit back and be nice about it. And, hey, man, killers kill people. And the killers that we got right now, and so I just had a kid at Buzz that quit, right? And I was telling his dad, I said, listen, man, I said, this life ain't for everybody. I said, your son grew up really nice life. I said, there's a lot of grimy, gritty, hardened killers in the SEAL teams right now. We've been killing people for 20 years right now, right? And I said, it's a different type of guy that thrives in that environment. And I said, your son didn't thrive in that environment because he's not that type of guy. And so it's like Marines. If you send Marines into a town, they're going to kill people. That's what Marines do. The Marines right now have been killing people for the same 20 years. If you send them into a town, they're going to kill bad guys.
But Jake, in this case, the SEAL is accused of executing a teenage detainee. I mean, you're not saying that's what SEALs do, are you?
No, not at all. But what I am saying is, like, we're going back and accusing. How long ago was it? It was 2000 and what? When he got when they're saying he did
this. I mean, it was last year, I believe. It was an ISIS detainee. It was an ISIS detainee outside Mosul.
Yeah, but I thought the incident was a couple years old, was it not?
I mean, no. I mean, the charges came relatively quickly after the incident.
Yeah, I read the article. I read the story.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. This is from Navy
Times. It was 2017, and then he came up on charges in 2018.
Okay, so 2 years ago. So here's what I know. If it was that big a deal, they would have got him then. Because the SEALs aren't going to let you do dumb shit, right? Like, they're just not going to let you. Like, someone in his platoon would have said something.
They did, though.
If it was stupid.
But that's exactly why this case came about, was guys in his platoon spoke out. And his defense claims that it's a grudge that his subordinates have against him. And I couldn't tell you, you know, are the charges true or not? But, I mean, people in his platoon clearly did speak out against it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and pick a side of the fence, right? But I know this, when you go to combat, people get killed. And I'll lay my head on that one, right? Like, and killing bad guys is what it is, right? Like, I mean, look, hey, here's what I'm going to say. Look at what ISIS was doing to people when they captured them.
But is that the bar? Is that the bar? I mean, is ISIS the bar? Like, we just have to...
No. But you have to meet savagery with savagery, period. And I'm not saying... I'm not passing judgment on what Eddie Gallagher did. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I don't know exactly what transpired.
No, neither did I.
But I know this. I watched them dudes burn a Jordanian pilot in a cage. I watched them drown another dude in a cage. Okay? It is what it is, right? Like, if you send me over there and my job is to kill people and we start killing people, then that just is what it is. So, you know, and I don't want it to be taken out of context, like we go over there and we kill everybody. But at the end of the day, I don't know the Gallagher story. I wasn't there. I know this. In the fog of war, a lot of crazy stuff happens. Okay. Security rounds are administered, right? Some guys are getting in trouble for security rounds at one point. I know this. If you're on the ground and I got to go by you, I don't have a problem putting a security round in you, because the last thing I want you to do is get up sometime in the future and shoot me in the back. So, you know, the whole fact that he was a detainee and he was in handcuffs and all that other stuff. Yeah, maybe it didn't go down as clean as everybody thinks it did. So, but that's why he's going to get an opportunity to kind of represent himself. And, yeah. You know, the witnesses are going to come forward and we're in America. And, you know, I'm not the president of the United States, because if I was the president, you know, the rules of engagement would be a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, this has been it's been a controversial subject. The one thing that I'll be honest that remains kind of consistent, at least on here, of the SEALs that I've spoke to. I mean, you are saying what you're saying is very similar, honestly, to what Kristen Beck said to me, and what I see a lot of other SEALs who have a presence on social media saying. I mean, I've heard your take on this, Jack, which a lot of people agree with. The Navy SEAL community, the guys who are like in the public, at least, there's been a great deal of support for this guy, it seems.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all have a tendency to close ranks, right, when there's an accusation, and it becomes not just protecting the individual, but protecting the unit. So there's a tendency to do that. But I mean, it'll shake out in the court martial, I suppose. You know, the facts of the matter will come out. People will testify under oath. And you know, like Jake said, I wasn't there. I can't tell you if this guy did it or not. But I'm also not going to excuse the alleged behavior. I don't think it's okay for our soldiers to engage in that type of behavior.
No, not at all. Right. And that's what I'm trying to get across. I just, you know, I think a lot of times the general public doesn't understand how nasty the business is.
Yeah.
And we do a good job of kind of keeping the nastiness away from them. And that's why we signed up to go do what we did, right? But at the end of the day, if you start sitting there, you know, like, we all know the reason for call-outs, right? Like, we had to do call-outs now because they were sending six-year-olds out to blow us up.
Yeah, tactical call-outs.
And so, yeah, now you got to shoot six-year-olds, right? And people are like, oh, you don't shoot six-year-olds. Well, you do if they're going to blow y'all up, right? Like, and that's the thing, like, you know, a lot of guys, like, I got, you know, I mentor a bunch of guys going into SEAL teams, and they all ask me the same thing. And I say, listen, man, you're signing up for a really dirty game. And I said, you got to understand, like, how grimy and gritty you have to be to thrive in that environment. And it always shocks them. They're like, well, you know, really? And then they get to the teams. Like, I just had a kid come back from deployment 2 months ago. And he's like, oh my God, Jake. He's like, you couldn't have told me or prepared me any better for just how rough it really was out there. And I said, yeah, bud, like, there's no glamour in going to war. There's nothing glamorous about it, nothing. You know, and in our culture, in our society, like cowboys and Indians and all of that stuff, we try to glamorize
right.
all of that stuff.
No, then we strip the moral ambiguity out of it and try to make it like, you know, they're good guys and bad guys. In that sense, yep. We don't really prepare these young guys for war.
No, and like the example I'm going to give you on the Eddie Gallagher deal, like look at my guy Keith Berry, right? I know Keith. I was in buzz with Keith. I grew up with Keith at SEAL Team 8. He was in my SEAL platoon. I've known Keith for 21 years at this point, right? So he gets charged with rape in San Diego, gets found guilty, goes to prison for 2.5 years. The whole time, everybody in the community knew exactly what happened. He had been framed, right? And not framed. He had been railroaded by the Vice Admiral, JAG, and the president. And sure enough, you know, what was it, 6-8 months ago, it all comes out. All the stuff comes out. The admiral that had to find him guilty came out and made a statement that he was forced to make a guilty plea when he knew he was innocent. And now he's out of jail.
This is the case, right? Where it was deemed that there was undue command influence over the trial.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. But like when it went down, like she had slept with like whatever it was, she had slept with X number of team guys in the last like 6 months at her command. He had been sleeping with her for like 2 years at that point. Like it wasn't no secret what was going on. And the president basically came in and told her, hey, find him guilty. I don't care. And so they found him guilty, you know, but luckily, you know, in America that justice prevailed and he got out. But I mean, shoot, he's in the military. It ain't like they're going to give him a big check for spending 2.5 years in prison.
Jesus.
You know? So, you know, and I hope that the Eddie Gallagher thing works out, right? Positive or negative. You know, it's a big teaching point for the community. We always have them, right? You know, guy smuggling cocaine out of Puerto Rico in Twin 80s. You know, 24 sets of Twin 80s filled to the top with cocaine. They got back. Someone turned them in. They tried to sell it to a DEA undercover officer. Boom, boom, boom. You know,
Twin 80s are scuba tanks, if I know my
scuba tank
terminology correctly.
Tanks, 100%. Yeah. So, you know, either he didn't do it and he'll be fine, or it's going to be a very, you know, salient teaching point for the teams.
Yeah. And there's been quite a few of them in recent years. I mean, just since I've been on board here, there's just a lot of stuff that has happened in the SEAL community.
A lot of stuff. I mean, well, I think the SEALs have a lot of the public spotlight has been placed on them, but also 7th Special Forces Group has had a whole number of incidents that, you know, we've covered, including cocaine smuggling out of Colombia.
Oh, that's a guy, right? That was a good one, right? Like, but here's the deal, right? And I tell people this, and you know, I got a bunch of young dudes, and I say the same thing. If you're not a criminal, don't try to do criminal stuff. Because you may think criminals are stupid, but they've been criminals their whole lives. They understand the system and how to work the game. Non-criminals put 80 kilos of cocaine in some stuff and try to ship it from the embassy back to the United States like it's just going to make it. You know what I'm saying? Non-criminals, like, get 7 or 8 SEALs together in a platoon and then, hey, let's smuggle some cocaine back and make a quick $100,000 a piece. But yeah, that'd be great.
And then they're flashing around money in San Diego or Fort Bragg or wherever. Yeah, and it comes out real quick.
You know, who are we going to sell it to? I'll find somebody when we get back. Yeah, okay. That's what non-criminals say, right? Like, so it's we all learn from it. And, you know, then again, you got to look at, you know, like I say this all the time. The guys in the SEAL teams, the guys in Special Forces, they're different. They're savages, right? And sometimes you get them guys, they go off the reservation and they got problems, right? I'm going to give you a prime example. Just happened, okay? The two cops on duty and the female cop off duty playing Russian roulette. Jack, how many times have you heard of that one happening?
I've heard of it. I mean, you remember the Marines used to play the trust test all the time?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yep. Guys, what is that?
So on a Beretta M9 pistol, it has a double action trigger. So it's like a really heavy trigger pull as the hammer goes back. So as you pull the trigger, the hammer goes back. And then when you reach the breaking point, the hammer goes forward and the gun fires. So what Marines were doing was having one of them point the pistol at the other, and they'd pull the trigger back as far as they could without breaking, you know, the trigger so that the hammer falls. And a bunch of Marines got killed doing this.
Very stupid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but we say stupid, but that's the life of a savage, right? Like, savages do savage stuff. Savages play Russian roulette, right? And that's what they did. St. Louis, St. Louis cops playing Russian roulette. And we're looking around like, are you crazy? But they're different, right? Like, they're different. Like, people, they're not normal, average human beings. They're type A, super high-performing, massively capable individuals. And their thresholds of what's acceptable are completely different than anybody else in the world. And, you know, like you're saying, Jack, the trust test, right? I mean, probably every 4 years we have two SEALs that have a quick draw contest and shoot each other because their capabilities are about the same and they both kill each other. It's the same thing, right? Like, this to me is no different than that, than everything else that's going on. It's just a fact of you have type A, super high-performing people that are massively capable, and their levels of acceptance are different than everybody else's.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to say because I can't really relate to it. And I mean, it's a dumb thing to do. I get your point, but you know, especially for these guys to needlessly lose their lives out of probably boredom and, you know, and
yeah. Well, that's one of those points where it's like, you think you're a bigger badass than you are, and you're kind of letting your ego take hold. Like, don't, you know, playing the trust test or Russian roulette or whatever. And then no one should be losing their life over something like that. I mean, geez.
And alcohol, normally liquid courage is normally 90% involved.
True. Yeah,
very true, man.
You know, they're drunk and they get real drunk, and then I'm faster than you are. No, I'm faster than you are. You think so? Let's do it. Boom. And then they both did. Jeez. Damn. I guess we were both really fast, right? But we saw it. You know, this just happened 3 years ago. The two guys drowned in the swimming pool, right?
Yep.
Same deal. It's the same deal. It's just different mechanism, right? Hey, I can go down and back. I can go 100 meters underwater. If you can do it, I can do it. I bet you I can go farther than you can. Yeah, let's go. Boom, they jump in the water. They make it 75 meters, and they make it 74 meters, and they both drown, pass out, and die within 1 meter of each other in the same pool.
Damn.
Did they think for a second and say, hey, you go first, I'll watch you, and then I'll go, you watch me? No. I'm going to beat you in this pool underwater. Let's go. And it's 74 meters, one passed out. It's 75 meters, the other one passed out. And then they both drown in the pool right there together.
You might like this. Same exact form. You might like this story, Jake. I read this book about the 2nd Ranger Battalion dudes who robbed a bank out in Washington State. And the team leader would have his privates do what he called a suicide check. So he'd throw them a pistol and they'd just have to put it to their head and pull the trigger. And it was the same kind of concept as the trust test. Like, he was basically brainwashing these young guys, which, you know, culminated in a bank robbery.
Of course, but it comes back to they're wired completely different than anybody else in the country. And that's why they're in those jobs, right? Like Army Ranger, like, you know, I grew up right here at Fort Lewis. Like I grew up, like I got a Ranger tab and a 2nd Ranger bat tab. And I've had them since probably the 2nd grade. And all I wanted to do is be Army Ranger Green Beret. That's it. That's all I wanted to do, 2nd Ranger bat. And then I went to the Naval Academy and things kind of changed a little bit. But like I still have those tabs. And so like 2nd Ranger bat in high school, we used to go beat those guys up. Because all the Rangers think they're tough and they can fight, and we would go up to Tillicum and we would just maul Rangers. And so, you know, like, it was what we did. Like, we were high school athletes and we loved to fight. And so we're like, yo, let's go bang Rangers tonight. We go up to Tillicum. They'd be in the bars. We'd wait, hey, man, fuck you Rangers, you know? Oh, man, I dropped the F-bomb. Okay, don't.
You can say whatever you want in here, man.
I can, but I don't. I, you know, I work for a great dude, so I got to be careful. So,
all right, I'll censor that.
Anyway, we would go fight them dudes, you know, and that's just. But I grew up in the 2nd Ranger bat. You know, they had some guys from Dev Group, some support personnel, robbed a bank in Virginia Beach with silenced MP5s.
Oh no, shit!
It took the FBI like 1 minute. Who has silenced MP5s here? Damneck and the SEAL teams. Okay. Let's go over to Damneck. Okay, okay. Oh, there they are. Hey, give me those four people right there. Did you guys just rob a bank? Sure enough. Let's see where the MP5s were Friday afternoon. Oh, these four guys checked the MP5s out to go to the range. Let's go to the range video. Oh, they weren't at the range. Oh, here they are driving in their car to the bank. Imagine that, right?
What year was that, Jake?
Late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it was largely the same thing with the Rangers. You know, they forgot to take the license plate off the getaway car. You know, it was like putting two and two together wasn't too difficult. I think they busted them, you know, like within a week.
How about the fact that just the way they moved? Right? See, no one understands this. Like, criminals don't move like Rangers move. Right. As soon as they came in the bank, I'm like, oh, those are military dudes. Oh,
yeah.
Those are special forces. Oh, yeah. He said clear. Oh, yeah. We're good. No problem. Oh, yeah. Wait, time on target. Hey, man, go over the range of bat and get whoever robbed you. Like, and the thing is that no one understands all of the guys in the FBI and the Secret Service. They're all military guys, too. So they know exactly what it looks like. They're like, oh, hey, that's Joe from 2nd Ranger Bat right there.
Yeah, and they know exactly what a normal bank robbery looks like by comparison.
100%. And that's what it comes back to, right? Like Special Forces guys, they think they're capable of doing anything, right? Which they are, for the most part. But being a criminal isn't one of them, because criminals have criminal minds and special forces guys don't think like criminals do. And criminals have been to prison a couple times, so they know, hey, man, if I don't take the license plate off this getaway car, I'm going to prison. So they remember to take the license plate off the getaway car.
Yeah, you know? That's a good point.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. But yeah, you know, I'm right here. I tell this story. I just told a story the other day. This one's incredible. Okay. So I'm in 10th grade. I come home from my morning run, and there's a bunch of black cars in my driveway. My dad says, hey, stay in your room. You're not going to school today. I'm like, all right, cool. Don't know what's going on, but I go to my room. I'm playing video games on my TV. I look out my window, and I'm looking out my window right now in my bedroom. And there's a wood fence, a little hill, and there was like seven guys in suits with long guns on the fence.
What?
So, that's not normal. Okay. So I said, let me turn on the news. Turn on the news, all over the news. Bank president's daughter from Washington Mutual gets kidnapped.
Oh, shit.
In Bellevue. Okay. So I don't put two and two together, because it's like 6:30 in the morning right now. And the bank president's daughter get kidnapped at like 6 o'clock. Bellevue's like an hour and a half away, hour and 15 minutes. Okay. So I'm sitting in my room. I go back to playing video games. More suits arrive. I come out the living room. My dad says, go back to your room. I go back to my room. I look out the window. There's probably 50 suits. And now there's guys in camouflage on my fence. I'm like, all right. I don't know what's going on, but something's happening. Okay. So about 9 o'clock in the morning, my dad comes in and says, hey, man, get your stuff for school. We're going to school. So I get in the car. I said, Dad, what's going on? He said, I can't tell you. I'm like, all right. So I drive to school. Don't think nothing of it. Get to school. We're supposed to go to practice. And all of a sudden, they lock the school down. I'm like, man, what is going on? They cancel practice. About 5:30, they send everybody home. No practice that day. And I don't even remember what – I think it was – I don't remember what – it's probably this time. It might have been golf. I don't remember what the sport was I was in. Maybe the end of wrestling season. But we all went home. So I walk in the house, and now there's 200 cars at my house. Okay? So, I mean, as I'm – my buddy's driving me home, literally the whole street is black cars. On both sides of my house, both blocks, like 200 black cars. And so I still hadn't put two together. I come home. I turn the TV on. They got my neighbor's house on TV. Okay. So here's what happened. This dude kidnapped the girl, the bank president's daughter, at like 6:02. At 6:20, them 10 suits showed up in my yard. He still hadn't even got home yet. He had an hour and a half, hour and 15 minute drive from Bellevue back here. And somehow, in 15 minutes, they had people on station at his house waiting for him to come home. You tell me how they do that. How do they know that guy in that house on Lafayette Street in Silicon Washington kidnapped the bank president's daughter over an hour and 15 minutes away? And they knew it in 15 minutes and could drive here.
Because
like, I know there ain't no FBI agents.
They were already
in the
watching
area.
Him.
They were already watching him. Something was going on, right? So here's what's crazy. So by 7 o'clock, there was like 100 people here. He hadn't showed up yet. He pulled into his driveway and he had put her in a trunk, and they didn't see her in the car. They had snipers all around. They say, hey, we didn't see her. So at like 4:30, they made entrance into his house, and he drove through the garage, and there's this little alleyway behind his house. It doesn't look like an alleyway. It looks like a little grass hill. But if you know the area, you know you could drive up it, and he got away. And then they had a big shootout in the park across from the high school.
Holy shit.
And they killed him, right? And so then we found out that he had murdered his first two families. He murdered one family in a fire, and then the other family died in a car crash. And all this stuff started coming out. But ever since then, if you even like people want to go do crimes and stuff, I'd be like, yo, let me tell you this story about my sophomore year of high school when the FBI showed up to a guy's house 15 minutes after he committed the crime. 15 minutes after he committed the crime, they were at his house already just waiting for him to come home. You tell me how they did it. I don't know. I know it's the government. They got a lot more tools than we got. So if you're going to go be a criminal, just understand this. You're going to have to take a couple lumps and go to prison a couple times before you can actually figure out how to be a criminal.
Man, that's an amazing story. What's this guy's name if people want to research him? I mean, that's got to be – it's an insane story.
Oh, man. If I know if you type in – and, you know, this was pre-internet days. This is the 88, 87. If you type in Steilacoom, Washington, S-T-E-I-L-A-C-O-O-M, Washington – and then Washington Mutual Bank President's daughter kidnapped, it'll have to come up.
Gotcha. I think people want to do their own research on this. I mean, it's a crazy story.
Oh, dude, it happened on Lafayette Street. So I live at 1314 Lafayette. It's probably 13, it's Janie Light's house. So 1316 maybe, 1316, somewhere in there.
What ended up happening to the bank executive's daughter?
She was fine. She tied up in a chair in the house, drugged up.
Wow.
He hadn't done anything to her. He literally was just trying to get money from her. Like he wasn't like a petty or anything like that. He was kidnapping her to try to get some ransom money from the president of Bank Washington Mutual.
Yeah, that never works.
So that it had a cool ending.
Man, this has been a fun episode, man. some great stories here. I'm glad we got into the Eddie Gallagher stuff, because had we have not, we wouldn't have had all these awesome stories. Always love having you on, man. I didn't expect to get into all of this, and I think the audience is going to love it. So at Jake's Wig on Twitter, ZWEIG, at Jake's Wig 1911 on Instagram, facebook.com/Jake's Wig Dude, as in dude, you're screwed. And man, it sounds like you're up to a lot of great stuff now being the director of player development at University of Illinois. And I'm glad we touched base, man. It's been a few years and we'll definitely do it again sooner.
Awesome, man. Gay, make sure you give me a beep on that FU. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate it.
Man, that was a fun episode. And it's funny because if you look at like my prep sheet here, I didn't have that much prepared to talk about. You know, I just figured, hey, we'll have Jake on again. And I had no idea we were going to get into all those stories, but they were some amazing stories.
No, me neither.
And when I asked him for the name of the guy, you could tell that he, you know, this audience is very suspicious of hearing crazy stories like that. But I mean, he had every detail. I'm sure if you do Google that, it actually did happen. And as some of these stories are just unbelievable that you guys exchanged about, you know, basically guys in the military trying to, you know,
smuggling drugs, using government logistics lines to smuggle contraband. That's federal time.
If anything, this episode was a deterrent if you're thinking of
I definitely concur with Jake. Like, the temptations are always there, especially like just speaking from my own experiences, like in SF and special forces dudes, they get deployed all over the world on like training missions and stuff like that. And the temptations are there. The alcohol is there. The drugs are there. The women are there. The guns are there. You know, the opportunities are there, but it just isn't worth it. In a number of ways, it's the wrong thing to do professionally. It's the wrong thing to do when you represent our country. But beyond just getting on like my high horse, you know, with a little morality tale or something, it's not the right thing for the soldier either. Yeah. Like it seems tempting at the time, but like, it's just not worth going to fucking prison, man. I told the story about the guy who was, he had a cache in his backyard with plastic explosives.
You may have. I don't.
When I was in fifth group,
if you have, it's been a while. Yeah, if you want to, you know what? Let me. I'll do these reads, and then we'll get into it.
Yeah,
because
sure.
I'll leave the audience wanting a little bit more after this. And then I actually have a question for you. So, be sure to check out Crate Club. We have different tiers of membership depending on how prepared you want to be, and gift options are available as well. Scott Whitner from the Loadout Room, Army Ranger Drew Wallace, who you've heard on the show, and all the other guys from Hurricane involved with Crate Club are putting together great gear. A lot of custom products in those, from sunglass cases to EDC bags, although we're throwing in some other products that aren't our own, like that Vertex sling bag, cool stuff like that, and all sorts of manly products. It's a club for men, by men. You can check that all out at crateclub.us. Once again, that's crateclub.us. specops.us. Also, as a reminder for those listening, now is the time to sign up for the SpecOps channel, our channel that offers the most exclusive shows, documentaries, and interviews covering the most exciting military content today. The SpecOps channel premiere show Training Cell follows former Special Operations Forces as they participate in the most advanced training in the country, everything from shooting schools, defensive driving, jungle and winter warfare, climbing, and much more. And you can watch all of that content by subscribing to the SpecOps channel, and that's at specopschannel.com, and take advantage of a membership for only $4.99 a month. That's specopschannel.com. Sign up today. And, of course, I want to let you guys know about the NewsRep Financial Report. We have a lot more content coming on there. We actually just had a meeting yesterday that all of us were a part of digitally to talk about some updates with the financial report, and there's going to be some new stuff you're going to see on there. So exclusive information that you can act on today to secure a brighter future for tomorrow. The NewsRep Financial Report can help you discover new investment strategies in the defense sector. Defense industry stocks can be a lucrative investment if you buy at the right time. Our team of foreign policy, security, and military experts provide real-time intelligence for stocks based on global trends that affect financial markets in the national defense industry. By subscribing now, you'll get exclusive access to our industry expertise, the NewsRep Financial Newsletter Advantage. Our team offers unmatched defense industry familiarity and expertise, unbiased knowledge of geopolitical trends, full access to NewsRep's foreign policy, security, and financial intelligence platform, and access to our team of experts and analysts. Just go to the FinRep tab at the top of the newsrep.com to sign up today. That's FinRep on the newsrep.com. With that, yes, let's get into that story.
Yeah, I don't know if I told this one before or not. I may have, but it was my last year in the Army. So it was probably 2010. It wasn't a guy in my battalion. It was a guy across the way in another battalion in fifth group, and came into work one morning, found out this guy got arrested. He had a cache of C4 plastic explosives that he had stolen from the military, buried out in his backyard. Like, ATF moved in and arrested him. And the story that was given was that a couple hunters were moving around through the woods and they came across this thing. And we were like, that didn't make sense to any of us. Like, what the fuck? And I heard a different story years later, which makes a lot more sense, that he was having a house party and they were talking. He was bragging to people about how he had, you know, C4 buried out in his backyard somewhere. And one of the girls invited to the party was a secretary for ATF. Mm. And so she went back to her employer and was like, oh, this SF guy said this and that. So they moved in and they got him. And I mean, I bet that guy's still in prison today. I never really like investigated it or like checked up on that, but yeah, what are you going to, my question is what the fuck was he going to do with that much plastic explosives? That's like some, like an amount you use to like demo a bridge or something like that.
Do you think the idea was to sell it?
I really don't know. I really don't know.
I would think that would be the objective, right? To, I mean, make profit off of it.
You know, SF guys are kind of like hoarders too, in a sense. Like, I think like all of us have our little like zombie preparation kit, in a sense. Like a friend of mine from the Philippines, he made the comment. He's like, yeah, in the Philippines, everyone has in their backyard like a buried cache of ammunition. They call it your savings. Those are my savings, because there's savings for later. You never know, right? But 100 pounds of C4 seems a little excessive for personal use, right?
Yeah.
Like, I just need, I you know, maybe you need some demo for personal use. Should the ball go up? Should the balloon go up? But yeah, 100 pounds or more. I mean, that seems a little excessive.
Yeah. You know, obviously you can't expose names on this, but it makes me wonder in, you know, your case, because you guys have all these great stories you're going back and forth on. Do you know anybody who did commit some type of crime, you know, to make profit, and they did get away with it, and, you know, no one will ever know about it?
There are, I mean, doing dirt happens all the time. Guys like embezzling op fund money and coming home, that happened all the time, all across the force. Guys writing off weapons. So like I'll tell this other story, something that happened in Special Forces. There was one team, they were driving down the road, an IED went off somewhere. No one was hurt or killed, you know, bomb went off, whatever. The team sends up to hire a form saying equipment lost, you know, equipment that had to be written off because it was all destroyed in the explosion. Apparently, all 12 of this team's suppressors for their M4s were blown up in this IED that didn't destroy the vehicle or hurt anyone. And I'll just leave it at that. You be the judge.
Suspicious.
Yeah. You be the judge. but stuff like that happens all the time. But then when you get into this kind of stuff where like guys are trying to smuggle home cocaine and stuff like that, as Jake got into, like these guys don't know what to do with that. And it's also like you're bringing more and more people into the conspiracy and people just can't keep their fucking mouths shut.
Yeah.
And they start flashing money around, questions get asked, you know, guys are having team parties and they're throwing money around. Stuff like that starts to come out. There's a guy, I probably shouldn't repeat some of these stories, but I knew a guy who was a paralegal.
As long as the people are anonymous.
This guy who was a paralegal for a special operations unit. And, boy, did this dude have stories, because he had to deal with the teams that were fucking up. And so he had this whole story about how like they lost all this equipment or one guy like sold it off. And so they had like a kitty, right? They had like a coffee pot and they were like, we got to raise money to like, so we can like put the money back. So it's not missing. And then they would like get drunk and like spend all the money in the kitty. So then they'd like have to start it all over again and went back and forth until they finally got busted. Like just perpetual fuck ups. I mean, that's what it comes down to. But yeah, again, it's just not fucking worth it, man, to go fucking with that kind of stuff. It's just not worth it. And it's not worth any of our guys going to jail. It seems the temptation is there, but it's not worth it.
Yeah, don't do it. So last thing, did you want to give an update on the Jeffrey Epstein stuff?
Oh yeah, well, I was just reading an article yesterday about it in the woman that wrote the Perversion of Justice article. I think her name is Julie Brown. She did an update on Epstein because just downtown here in Manhattan, they had a hearing yesterday, and it was about whether or not they're going to unseal the records. So basically, what has happened is that the sweetheart deal that Jeffrey Epstein got down in Florida is being overturned because the courts violated the civil rights of the victims by not informing these young women that this sweetheart plea deal was being made. So they never had the opportunity to give testimony or appeal or anything. So because their civil rights were violated, this thing is going, it looks like it may very well go back to trial all over again. And now there's a debate happening whether or not the records, the court records, should be unsealed. The ones that were are released, some weren't released at all, and others are heavily redacted. Like one of the lawyers made the point, like this is like the kind of records you get from the CIA when you make a FOIA request. Like everything's just blacked out. And there's some resistance because I believe both other victims and other perpetrators will be revealed when these records are released. And I believe Dershowitz, Epstein's lawyer, is now saying go ahead and release them. Mike Cernovich actually had a lawyer down there who was also trying to get the records released. And I'd have to go back and read that article, but I think it was the lawyer for what's her name? Maxine Ghislaine. The woman who was allegedly the madam for Jeffrey Epstein, another very wealthy woman. Her lawyers are trying to have the records remain sealed. So that's the debate that's happening right now.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll keep you updated on that. Maybe another article in the future from you since you've written about it.
I wrote about it like way, way back before it was anyone wanted anything to do with this story. And, you know, I give credit to the Daily Beast for staying on the story and writing updates to it. And also Julie Brown, the journalist who wrote this big expose that finally got the courts to take some action. So there are a lot of people wanted to ignore this and make it go away, but there were a few out there who stayed on it.
Well, I guess that's it, man. Be sure to pick up Jack's book, Murphy's Law.
Murphy's Law. You can pre-order it now. Yeah. The book went to printer, so it's being printed right now.
Yeah, we're very close to the release date. So pick it up. A lot of people are excited for it. I get all these comments on Instagram, and it's great to see. And then last thing is go check out The Power of Thought. We did an interview with Laird Hamilton, big wave surfer. And yeah, we're going to push that really hard because it's a pretty big guest for us on there. So if you go check out The Power of Thought, we did a video that'll be on YouTube as well as anywhere else you get your podcasts. That should be up right now as you're listening to this. So if you haven't had enough podcast, go check that out. Next episode, another guy we haven't had on the podcast in a long time, Mike Schlitz, will be back with us.
Yeah, way too long.
Yeah, excited for that. Then we'll do a Q&A. So once again, send your questions to softrep.radio@softrep.com. We're going to do a full Q&A show. And then I'm going to air the Kristen Beck interview. So a lot of great stuff on the horizon. A lot of good content this past week that I hope you guys are enjoying. As always, go like our Facebook page, I'm going to say primarily, because that one we're really still building. Go look up SoftRep Radio on Facebook and like it. At SoftRep Radio on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Ian Scotto on Twitter. Jack is at Jack Murphy RGR. And we're out.
You've been listening to SoftRep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at SoftRep Radio.